So, we talked earlier about Phone 7 itself, and now we're going to have a chat about, well, I have to say, so I'm going to I was told never apologise at the start of a presentation. This is how bad it's going to be. So I have two apologies. The first one is it's Microsoft's fault. Microsoft have provided too much updates in Mango. There's lots of them. So whether I'm going to have time to actually get through everything in a sensible speed. So I have a lot of material to cover in a short amount of time. So it is an intentional kind of rush. I'm happy to as many questions as you want at the end, but I'm very conscious I want to get through a lot of material in a short space of time. It is going to be a bit of death by PowerPoint. It was by design, so I apologise up front. And the other thing I've got to apologise for is the naming conventions. You'll actually notice that there's an even distribution of Windows Phone 7.1, Windows Phone 7.5, and Mango through the whole definition of this stack. The reasoning is that Mango is the name I know it by, and whenever I'm writing, I thought, oh, it's Mango. But then it was rumored that it was going to be Windows Phone 7.5, and then when it was actually announced a few weeks ago, it turned out to be actually Windows Phone 7.1, hence the slide. But unfortunately, I keep thinking of it as Mango, so I do apologize. I have corrected as much as I can, but we can move on. So I'm fairly confident you all know who we are. So we can leave it on that. And you probably know who I am, or don't care. So I'm going to give you a very brief background. I'm going to run through some hardware and some notable important issues. I'm going to very briefly touch on user features. Now, there is another side that all of the features of this release have not been finalized. There is more to come. I don't know what they are. The team's been quite close-lipped on this sort of thing. So I'll share with you the pieces I think are important. And that's how we're going to do that one. And then we'll go through some developer features, coding and tooling, marketplace, and then summary. So again, these are my views on Mango. They do not represent in any way, shape, or form Microsoft's. And again, because the tooling will change slightly at release time, you know, all information held within this presentation is valid until the end of the presentation and bears no warranty after that point in time. Okay. I'm not doing too well on the slides. There we go. So it looks like most of you have actually either seen or heard of Windows Phone 7. I think Windows Phone 7 is a very interesting tooling device. Microsoft have gone for a slightly different approach to everybody else. Now, I've actually stolen that from one of Brandon Watson's decks, and I'm sure I'll get shouted at some point in time. But I think it gives you a very nice representation of Windows Phone 7 itself. It has a very clear, crisp UI. Earlier we recommended very heavily look at the Metro design guidelines. I can't urge you strongly enough to do so. I'm a big fan of Metro. We'll be doing some demonstrations and some Metro stuff at the end of the summer, which hopefully you'll attend. And we think Metro is a really great way of actually delivering information to people. The key, though, is there's nothing around the outside. You're delivering pure information, just what the user wants. You know, no spinning lights or anything that isn't needed. It's just very plain, and it delivers what people want. So, I'm having slight technical issues. In the release that actually being delivered to press right now, we actually have a nice range of changes in the hardware foundation, software architecture, the app model, the UI model, and pretty much everything else has all changed in one go. Existing applications will work as they always have done, but there's been enough engineering work under the bonnet to allow you to do all of the things that you probably wish to do so. Now, this is probably not a Microsoft politically correct thing to say, but really, what this platform now gives you is effectively a level playing field with everybody else. You now can do the same as everybody else. Well, that's not maybe a great statement to make on a platform that's just coming out, but it means you're no worse off. There's certain features like access the camera and a few other pieces like that were missing in the previous release. I would say as of this release, everything you could want is in the platform, but actually delivered to a series of principles which we'll cover later, things like good battery life, good user experience, security and reliability, and all the features that the other phone products deliver. I did get into a lot of trouble, and as it's being filmed, I'll try not to repeat that. I don't go in for bashing into other products, but I do. Part of my background is security, and what I do like is a reliable app store that delivers users an experience where if an app is behaving badly, the app store can revoke that, and so the users are being protected by a background of work. Now, some phone providers provide that and some don't. I would say it's very important for most users, because most, I mean, you've got to expect that you're a very educated audience, you know what you're doing. Most users don't. Most users use phones as a utility application. So it's very important that the phone protects them and the marketplace protects them from themselves and third parties. Okay. So what we've actually got in the release is a new definition of the chassis. For those who don't know, Microsoft have a definition of the chassis that Phone 7 can run on. We have better camera support in code. Silverlight's now Silverlight 4. We have better garbage collection. We actually have a fully running version of SQL Server CE. We have fast application switching. Fast application switching allows you to have multiple applications at the same time, but as I'll explain later on, but with a complete regard to quality of power saving and user experience. Silverlight and XNA have been merged together, which is quite nice, and we've also got the ability to do multitasking in specific scenarios, again, looking at the user experience and battery life as a primary concern. And then we have extras and calendars, which we'll cover off as well. So we've got a nice rich set of constructs for you to use, very easy to use, low coding delivery, and hopefully high productivity for the users as well. So the real only hardware change is that you can actually now have I should actually do the animation. There we go. So we now have a gyroscope as an option, and a different CPU, which is the MSM 7X30. For those of you who don't know, because I certainly didn't, I thought the chassis was you got everything. It turns out that certain parts of these are actually more optional than I thought. I'll put my hand up. I thought Compass was mandatory, and it turns out that Compass isn't mandatory in any of the handsets. The LG handsets, for example, do not have a Compass inside, which I'll put my hand up and say, I only found that out recently. I was genuinely surprised. I actually have an HTC, so I hadn't noticed. So when you're actually writing applications, do be very careful to check that the hardware you're looking for to use, like the accelerometers or the gyros or the camera, are actually present. And my machine is slow. There we go. So existing hardware suppliers, LG, Samsung, and HTC, will be providing new Mango handsets. Interestingly, in all the announcements I've seen so far, there's been no notification of what's happening with Dell. I don't know. And then new handset providers, Acer, Fujitsu, and let's be completely honest about this, the important one is Nokia. And I'll tell you my views of Nokia at the end rather than now, but I suspect it's going to have a pretty significant impact. For those who don't know, there is actually a Nokia developer program run out of Nokia. I'll tell you now, we've already signed up. We'll still be only developing on Windows Phone 7, but you should be able to get extra support through Nokia as well, which I think will be well worth doing. And I think it's developer.nokia.com. I will actually post a link to that if that's any use to you. So there's a whole pile of new user features. Now, for the sake of this talk, I think it's fair to say that Microsoft have put a lot of effort into doing Twitter and Facebook and integration of all sorts of things that users will like to see in the consumer space. Now, that's nice and important because it's going to actually drive let's be fair, we want to see, or I certainly want to see, lots of people picking up Windows Phone 7 or 7.1s and actually using that experience. The Mango update will go into all the existing chassis of the Windows 7 phones, so pretty much everyone should be running Mango. So user adoption and nice user features are great to actually drive attendance to the platform, but the things I'm going to try and cover off are the things where I think Windows Phone 7 are going to go above and beyond all of the other platforms. If you want to find out about the other features, there's some nice videos on YouTube you can watch. So a phone is a phone is a phone, unless you actually want to use it for corporate use. So there's two or three problems with Phone 7, a few maybe. Windows Mobile was actually quite a solid corporate application platform, whereas Windows Phone 7, to be blunt, isn't. I don't want to put an application for my company up in Marketplace. It just doesn't make sense. And also, there's lots of things where if I want to send out emails which are encrypted, and I don't want people to... Does anybody actually use IRM? A few of you? Does anybody not know IRM? Some of you. Okay. IRM is the concept where I can mark up a document or an email for information rights management. So I'll maybe send you the email, but I'll mark it that it's for internal use only, you cannot forward it, and it actually protects the integrity of the information inside my organization. So now Phone 7 will actually support IRM across the board. You get better support about passwords and enterprise application security. So your IT managers can now actually manage the phones, say what the policies are for passwords and that sort of thing. And really what's happened is all of the corporate pieces from mobile have now been rolled into Phone 7. So if you're developing corporate-style applications, all of the work that corporates need is now in Phone 7. And what I'm hoping, and what I actually suspect will happen is companies will actually start picking up Phone 7 because it actually meets their corporate needs, whereas all of the other phone types do not do that. So I think there's going to be a nice adoption piece down the corporate market, which will actually make a big difference, which is what that piece is about. So again, sort of for end user adoption, which is sort of getting lots of things in, there's nice sort of threads and groups. Face detection in photos, which always scares me, that's a personal view. And LinkedIn boxes, so I can actually set up groups of people and emails and actually pin them to the start screen. Really what they've done is they've opened everything up and you can pin anything to the start screen, form groups and that sort of thing, and it's very sweet. Okay. Actually, I think I'll cover that. But here's the key one. I'm going to cover this in Marketplace later. Outside of network SSID, which means you can actually, a lot of corporates actually have hidden networks. I do actually find it funny that most companies think I've hidden my internal network by just hiding the SSID, but there are so many third-party tools that can find SSIDs anyway. I find it incredulous. Anyway, people do. So it supports hidden SSIDs, so you can type in your wireless network and make that work. But the deep links. Deep links is a concept that I can publish an application into Marketplace, and I can send you a link to the application, and only you can install it. And that means corporates can actually say, internally, here are our company applications, and only people with those deep links can actually pick them up. There's a caveat on that, which I'll cover later. So it does now mean you can actually do internal corporate distribution of applications. So if you're building applications for any public company that's going on Marketplace, that's fine. But if a big company comes to you and says, we want some internal applications, you can deliver them internally to that company by publishing them into Marketplace and delivering them through deep links. So this means, again, coming back to Phone 7 is now becoming a nice delivery into the corporate marketplace, and that will make a big difference. Okay. So I'm going to do a slight bit of IE9 on the user side. I'm not a web jockey. Again, I'm deep dev. IE9 is fast. It's a lot faster than IE8. It's been written from the ground up. But the experience that actually is going to be built into Phone 7 isn't just a web browser, it's actually, it's fully integrated. So we've also got things like Bing all the way through, searching, integrated searching, and I'll cover that when we actually come on to search extras a bit later on. But fundamentally, you've got good quality HTML5 markup with fast JavaScript on a mobile platform. That's the summary. The actual browser hides itself as best it can, so you get as much of the screen for your HTML5 application. You get full hardware acceleration all the way through, exactly the same as if you would on a standard PC. And the JavaScript engine is fast. It's blindingly fast. And the same markup as you normally deliver. Now, I've actually got a slide which is slightly out of scope. But what actually... What Microsoft actually did is they actually did a huge poll of a large amount of sites for their JavaScript to find out what was actually being used. And oddly enough, IndexOf in JavaScript was used a phenomenal amount. And so they made IndexOf incredibly fast inside the JavaScript execution engine. And oddly enough, if you look at those numbers, you only have to make that incredibly fast and you get a huge performance boost. So they've done that all the way through. By basically some very simple maths and prioritization, they've got a huge speed increase. Now, this actually is exactly the same on the desktop for i9 as well, I hasten to add. But just so you know, that's the kind of work they've been doing. But you also have some features that aren't quite as useful on a standard laptop or a desktop, such as geolocation, W3C geolocation, and GPS support. There is actually... For those of you who use Dom Local Storage, you have all of that. But this is the one I find quite strange, that you can actually have data URIs with a 4 gigabyte limit. Now, I don't know if any of you have actually tried to download 4 gigabytes over a phone. I do think that's possibly a little bit excessive or weird, but never mind. Anyway, onto the actual features. So what's actually been delivered in Phone 7 from the developer's perspective to actually allow you to do useful things? We have sensor APIs, camera, compass, and gyroscope, multitasking, background applications, fast application switching. We've got frameworks, SQL CE, calendars, and contacts. I have to say the calendar and contacts are useful, but not that useful. I'll explain when we get to those. And then sort of probably one of the most important things for me is actually full socket support. If you actually look, one of the decisions we actually did when we built our TFS application is we couldn't get the right socket support to actually connect to the server, which we now have in 7.1. As it turns out, the framework we built was a lot more useful long term, so we kind of won. But you now can do anything you want to do. And then some changes to live tiles. For those of you who haven't tried updating live tiles from your application, you can't, but you now can, and about time as well. So last piece on IE, and then I'll move on. You could also have, you now have a fully embeddable IE. Basically, it's the same engine. It runs exactly the same, and it's fast. And there's a couple of things to know. You can actually do Windows External Notify to actually pass strings into the application, and you can invoke scripts from your application as well, which is quite sweet. I'm just looking at time. Not doing too bad. Okay. So... One of my three largest complaints on the release of Phone 7 was the lack of camera support to developers. It was a crying shame. It was for a good reason, though. I don't know if you've noticed, I mean, the Microsoft guys won't say this, but Microsoft has a general problem in the market. If they deliver anything that's less than absolutely perfect, they get absolutely hammered in the press. Other companies can deliver something far less substantial, and it's a miracle. It's a very strange position right now. It does seem to be changing just enough. So Microsoft have had a very strong policy on Phone 7. If it's not perfect, if it's not secure, if it's not going to work exactly as the user would expect, it was cut. And I think it was the right thing to do. It just sort of it meant a lot of applications I was looking to build weren't available, but they are now. So camera didn't make the cut, but it's made a cut now, and you've actually got two different access points You could either get hold of the camera as effectively a web camera, so you can do video recording and that sort of thing, or you can actually get hold of the camera in a photo take a picture style as well, so you can do overlays and all that sort of stuff. Think about it, if you want access to the photo button when it's going to be pressed, or to actually do focus changes, or to take a picture, use Photo Camera API. If you actually want live streaming of imaging and taking videos and that sort of thing, use the webcam. Basically, one of them, you're asking for a picture, and the other one, it's being pushed to you. Simple. I haven't actually got some demos. So there is a slight problem. One of the problems with the emulator is it has no camera support. And I was actually hoping to actually do some live demonstrations of camera, because it's one of the features I was really looking forward to. And I wrote some code, and I was actually offered a unit to actually demonstrate this morning, but I didn't actually have time. It's a bit of a shame that the emulator doesn't allow you to use your local camera to emulate the camera. It would be a great feature. Anyway. So one of the new features we actually have now is we now have a gyroscope, which actually gives you rotational velocity. It is optional on Mango phones. It doesn't exist on existing phone 7s. So use of gyroscope, if available, would be a good thing to do. But beware, it might not be there. We also now have access to the compass as well. So previously we didn't have access to the compass. Applications from the vendors did, but as end users we didn't. There is a couple of notes that it can be a bit inaccurate depending on whether it's been calibrated or not. If you've actually used any of the compass applications, you have to do that sort of weird figure of eight sort of motion like that to calibrate it. It's the same on any compass, but it has to happen. But you can now get hold of the compass, and it's literally compass.get compass settings, something like that. But it's very easy to use. This is actually very important. What most of us have actually done is, did any of you actually try and do any of the 3D work on Phone 7? Has anybody actually tried? Nobody? So when we were building simulators, I took a Wiimote and actually paired it with Bluetooth and then actually pumped it into my emulator for simulating rotation and that sort of thing. That worked really well. And I built a couple of applications for trial, which worked fine. But when it actually got onto the phone, what I hadn't realized is the actual phone is actually incredibly, the accelerometers are just really quite sensitive. And what I was actually seeing is quite a large amount of fluctuation. The even holding it still in my steady hand, there's quite a lot of fluctuation. And so what I had to do is I had to write quite a few smoothing functions. Luckily, quite shortly afterwards, Microsoft actually published some samples for smoothing functions for the accelerometer. But to be fair, it was a bit of a pain. So what Microsoft has done in 7.1 is to actually build a virtual sensor called Motion, where they take all of the other sensors and give you a composite solution, which does all of the smoothing and all of that heavy analysis work for you, so you should actually get a fairly good rotation and feel. So what I would say is, wherever possible, use the motion sensor. Forget the rest of them, unless you want direct numbers that you need for some very precision work, use the motion sensor, because it does all of the heavy lifting and all the maths for you. But do be aware that the motion sensor may not be present, because obviously the other pieces of hardware might not be there. Okay. And there's just a quick example of, that's it. Set up an event handler, and then you get changes on effective sensor reading gravity and that sort of thing. It's very easy to do. Okay. If you are doing that kind of work, do be prepared to take account of sensor calibration, like the wonderful figure of eight for the compass and that sort of thing. Just if you go into that, the labs actually cover that very nicely. I will at the end actually suggest that if you're interested, and I hope you are, two things. One, the labs that have already been provided for Mango are very good. And the second one, Wilbur's already committed that as soon as he can, he'll actually be running full developer sessions for Windows 7.1 and Manga. So that's really cool. And if I was you, I'd pester him about it very heavily to try and get them run sooner rather than later. All of this sensor information actually allows us to start doing artificial reality, where we can actually hold things up and actually start overlaying information on top of the real world. I was going to try and run an AR demo again. No camera support, so that was going to actually be pretty hard. But you can now do AR, which is really cool. Okay, software foundation changes. We've now got Silverlight 4, implicit styles, and all that sort of stuff. Has anybody actually put the Mango development kits on their machines at all? Anyone? Some of you. So what you'll actually find is that the rich text box actually disappears. I think it's the rich text box. I haven't done it, but a few people have been posting, and there's actually a styling fix. And I can, if you actually look for my blogs, I'll actually make sure I post the links to fix that up for you. We've now got a whole pot of features, clipboard, web browser, and so on. And the performance is really important. I'll be covering Profiler later, but you've basically got generational garbage collection. Again, slightly surprised. I thought the first version had generational garbage collection, but that's a different problem. Networking, as said before, we've now got TCP, full UDDP. Interestingly, you only get multicast over Wi-Fi, which I think is actually quite a sensible thing to do, because obviously if you're actually connected to the just through a phone network, you don't want to broadcast the world. But if you're actually if you're connecting through Wi-Fi, you get full multicast, which is quite sweet. And it's all configured through Connection Manager, which is quite nice. I said we are on a tight time schedule. Before, we actually had Silverlight and XNA. They're now merged together. In reality, that means you've got sort of XNA embedded inside Silverlight. I'm not an XNA guy. I always defer to the ever-lovely Rob Miles. If you are interested in games development on phone, I would strongly urge you to search for the word Rob Miles, XNA phone. And there's some really, really brilliant sessions done by Rob Miles. I wouldn't even begin to... he's as mad as a bottle of crisps, to be honest. But if any of you have seen him, you'll know what I mean. He really is quite brilliant. So, but the important thing is you can now use nearly all of the XNA elements inside your Silverlight, which gives you a lot of performance, and that's quite sweet. That's what I'm going to do delivery on. This one, however, is important. So UX is quite sweet, but data is more important. People want data. They want runtime. What you now have is a full version of SQL actually running in the background that you can use for all of your data. Now, what you don't get is you don't get direct SQL access. This is all done through ADO.NET or Link or any of your favorite programmatic tools for modeling, but you don't get direct SQL. Now, as it turns out, there's an irony in this because technically, as an MVP, I'm part of the SQL group. Inside Black Marble, I'm not allowed near SQL. I've done all my SQL exams. I understand the concepts, but I like object models. I really do like object models. I like code. And honestly, I like the concept that you can't touch the SQL. You could just say, I want this information to be stored, and I'm going to store my objects, and that's how it is. But that is definitely a personal view. Many of you don't like that, but you are constrained to using programmatic constructs against the DB. I think long-term, personally, it's a great thing. Now, actually, I've read quite a few posts that you can actually connect through to isolated storage and actually use SQL tools. I haven't tried. So that's if you actually monitor my blog, I'll actually do some updates. I'm actually following that down at the minute. So fast application resume is the idea where if you think about it, we can actually have multiple applications running at the same time. Now, the new task switcher is basically you hold down and press the back button. Hold down and press the back button, and you can actually flip through the applications. From what I can see, that doesn't work in the emulator, or I've done it wrong. That could be me. So it might be a little bit hard to test without actually a real phone in the hand. And if somebody's actually got a Mango emulator in front of them, they can maybe try. But what basically happens is you're... I'll actually go through the next slides. It's going to be easier. So what we actually have at the minute, we have the concept where you go from non-running to launching to running to closing. It's, you'll see that 1,000 times. In real terms, somebody starts an application and they close it. We can cope with that, but that's nice and easy. We then go to move to the background, which does... When somebody actually presses the start or tries to start something else or locks the screen, we deactivate, we then tombstone, and then we can reactivate, which is how Windows Phone 7 works right now. In reality, more often than not, your application is ripped out of memory and you actually start again. So when you're deactivated, you save the state, and when you're activated, you bring the state back. So I would say you still have to write that and do exactly the same. But under 7.1, see Mangold 7.1, I'll get there in a few weeks, I will. We go from running, I do apologize about my machine. We go to the activated, where we save the state. But what's key though is normally when you tombstone, you save the state and then throw the state away. Top tip, hold on to the state, because when you're in the dormant state, all the processes and resources are detached, but you actually get a flag saying, is app instant preserved true? That means basically you haven't been thrown away. Everything is okay inside everything you've got inside your state, and you can just continue on. And that means the application comes back instantly. And then, but if you hit the dormant state, which means you have been thrown away, oddly enough, that comes back false, which means you have to resume as normal. So effectively, implement tombstoning no matter what, and then provide a shortcut through. And the actual response, allegedly, according to Microsoft, not seeing it on a real phone, is very fast. But what's the reason for putting all of this work in the tombstoning is users want to have lots of features on their phone, everything running all at once, but they also want to have a battery life more than an hour, apparently. So you want a user experience which is really great, is fast and responsive and does lots of things all in the background and everything happening, but you do have to think about battery and bandwidth and that sort of thing, because if the users get an absolutely massive bill for connectivity, they're going to get very upset as well. So if you look at a lot of the features as I've been describing them, it's when you're on a Wi-Fi, you get one type of resource. When you're on the network, you get a different type. When it's on battery and that sort of thing, you get different resources. Another feature that was missing from 7.1 is the ability to do, well, pretty much anything in the background whatsoever. So now we have background transfer services, we have background audio, we have background agents of two flavors, and alarms and reminders. Background audio, I've got to be honest, I mean, I'm not, the applications we tend to produce wouldn't need this, so I've never had to produce background audio, but if you think about music players and that sort of thing, it'll be a very useful thing to happen. If you're not writing a music player, then I suspect it's probably not very, very much use to you, but it's very easy to actually set one going, and you can run from quite a variety of sources for music, so that's quite sweet. Background agents, however, are a lot more interesting, well, to me. We have two types, periodic and on-idle. On-idle has some criteria, and on-periodic has some criteria. Actually, I might just jump to the next slide. There's a control panel to control everything, but the key thing is any agent you run can only run for 14 days. I think this will change. I think it will change to 28 days. I'll explain when I go through this slide. So the idea is that a periodic agent will run. As of a few days ago, it's dropped down to 20 minutes. It was every 30 minutes. I have been trying to keep my slides up to date as fast as I can. But it's only allowed to run for a maximum of 25 seconds. It's got to sit less than 6 megs of memory for the whole thing, and it's not allowed to consume more than 10% of the CPU. So if you want something running every now and again, check location or something like that, it's a perfect application to run. an on idle application will only run when it's on external power, when it's, as in, it's powered in from the mains, and it's not on a cellular network. So let me explain why. Periodic agents are great for background, lightweight jobs. On idle agents are, you're at your home station, and I want to start syncing up documents, I want to start syncing up data, music, whatever, but it's not going to cost the user any money on networking and that sort of thing. These requirements are likely to change. The 14-day notice is, there's a concept which is, if the user doesn't use your application, you shouldn't have an agent running all the time. So if a user runs an application which is associated with the agent, that 14 days will reset. So say we've produced a music player and we have a background agent that downloads songs that I've written, and I'm sort of, or me dancing quietly on the stage, which is truly horrible for all concerned. But, you know, somebody keeps playing these things, it will continue to download. Once the application stops being used, the agent will time out and will stop running after 14 days. The idea is this, that users don't uninstall applications, but complain about the performance of all the applications that are running. And the idea behind it, and I think the idea is slightly broken, the idea behind it is only to keep applications in mind that are being used. It's a nice idea. How it's going to pan out, I think only time will tell. That's a personal view. There's also a slight restriction on what you can actually do as a background agent, but fundamentally it's this. As a background agent, you cannot do anything with the UI, not surprisingly. So you can't use any of the XNA functionality because it obviously relies on hardware acceleration in the UI. You can't actually get hold of any of the sensor data. That's really about privacy and that sort of thing. So basically, you can't put in a malicious background application that actually starts to listen to the microphone, record your conversations, and send them off to a third party. So the restrictions, as it turns out, we've been asked quite a few times by financial institutions to produce an application for Phone 7 that actually records all of their phone calls and then deposits all phone calls with a regulator to stop, you know, insider trading. So as it turns out, it's really great and it nearly solves the problem I have, but they've said, but security concerns. I personally think those security concerns, personal security concerns, users should be allowed to say, well, actually, yes, that's part of our corporate policy. We are actually going to allow that for good reason. Maybe that'll change. But you are allowed to do tiles and toast, and you're allowed to do pop-up notifications, but not control the user experience itself. Okay, actually making good time. Notifications, obviously you can have toasts, exactly as before, better quality toasts, we'll do those in a second, and alerts and reminders, which actually I'm going to just go to that for description. So alerts and reminders, as code, you can now generate in 2 days' time, I want an alert to come up, or in 2 days' time, I want a reminder. Fundamentally, there's only one difference. On a reminder, if you touch that text in the center, it will launch your application with the context of the alarm, with the reminder in place. So your application will start up and it will give the information to say, this reminder has gone off with this context and the user's actually selected wherever they're selected. Now, as it turns out, on your Phone 7, in case you didn't know, if a reminder pops up right now, if you select the text in the middle, it will actually take you to the reminder itself. Well, there's a tip, there you go. But the alarm basically just notifies the user and the reminder launches the application. Background transfer, again, one of the problems that's in Phone 7, if you're trying to download something and really the application has to wait, if the application is then tombstoned, the transfer then stops. It's not exactly rocket science. So the ability to actually do a background transfer, a good example would be on our TFS Explorer. The background transfer would be, the agent would actually do background transfer to keep all of the builds up to date, and it wouldn't be done in the user thread. Excuse me. But bottom line is, we now can separate the user thread and the data gathering thread separate. Again, it's sort of, there's a 4 megabyte limit for downloads and a 20 meg over Wi-Fi. It's very likely those numbers will change. Okay. So here we go. Actually, I think I've covered these off quite nicely. There's your multitasking cheat sheet. So, actually, I'm not covering run under lock screen, but you can actually build applications that run under the lock screen, allegedly, but I haven't seen the documentation that covers that yet. Integration services. So, lifetime improvements. There's actually two fundamental lifetime improvements that you'll care about as a developer. The first one is you can create them on the fly. Well, no, three. You can actually update your live tile. Previously, because if you think about it, whenever you got to a tile surface, your application had already gone away. So you couldn't actually update your own live tile. Now, you, as an application, if you have information, you can now update your live tile. But more importantly, you can actually create more than one live tile. So if you have different pages inside your application, the one actually I'm showing there is a sample from myself where you have local news, world news, and tech news. You can actually have a live tile for each of those on the front. And as you hit the live tile for, say, tech news, it takes you to the tech news page inside the application. Am I running short on? Okay, fine. And it's a really simple process. You just get a notification to say, you set this up, and here's basically the information you provided back, and you just jump to the right page. It's really simple to implement, it's really simple to do, but it actually gives a really great user experience. That shouldn't have happened. There we go. But you can also set data on the back as well, and there's some... So Microsoft describe it as smart logic that allows asynchronous flipping of tiles. I think that's a random timer to you and me. Apparently it's very smart, so I don't know. But you can, any part of the tile you could update, the areas are larger, the amount of text you could put on is larger, and the imagery is a lot easier to do as well. And that's quite nice. And the update, as I quickly described, you can actually create multiple live tiles, and then whichever one you select, the application is just invoked with parameters. But as before, you can actually do a push notification as well, so the whole thing's all sync up quite nicely. Push notifications, you can do obviously all of the back of the screen and the multi-tile and all that sort of stuff. And you also have a feature which is rather unfortunately called, I'll put my teeth in for this one, Deep Toast. Deep Toast allows you to actually take user directly to different parts of the application and that sort of thing. I do think it's an unfortunate name, but never mind. But it's very quick to do. You just have to do a bind to shell toast and it'll sort everything out for you. When I talked earlier about IE9, I sort of alluded to some search changes. What SearchX was allowing you to do is, if somebody's actually using the search function and actually searching for movies or places, they might say, well, I found this place, say the RDS. As an application, you can register against search on the phone to say, if you get search results for a place, tell the user to use my application for place information. So what actually happens is, I'll search for RDS, and then under a tab under the search is a thing called extras, and my application will be listed. As soon as I touch my application starts, and the application is passed all of the search information that the user actually started with and all the results as well. So you can then use the information about the location, the lat long, and everything like that in your application straight off. Actually, building search extras is really easy. So if you think your application uses any of movies, places, events, and products, I think the list is longer than that, looking through the search extras documentation. You just bind yourself in. It's really quick to do, probably take you a couple of hours, and then you actually sort of effectively, you're starting to embed yourself into the Microsoft stack. I think that's actually probably an interesting definition of the difference between 7.1 and 7. That 7 is basically very isolated, your application stands by itself, and 7.1 allows you to start integrating through all of the pieces that Microsoft have been providing all along. That's a big difference. a new set of choosers for those who use choosers. You can now do Bing Maps task and searching. But you can also, if you want to put directions in and that sort of thing, it's great, very quick to do. The one that's important to me, it's a bit sad, is there is a feature in 7.1 as users, which I'm very pleased about. You can actually set your ringtone. Sad as it may be, I happen to like a particular ringtone. As it turns out, my phone corrupted earlier on, and it happens to play that ringtone now, but that's just some random corruption that happened on my phone, unfortunately. But on 7.1, you just have to select it from a list, and you can do that, which is quite nice. So there's a set of features which we'll quickly spin through. Contacts, you can read through the contacts. Now, for those of you who actually done things like any of the ID, you actually have to say in Marketplace that your application is going to look at the contact list to allow the user the option of saying, I don't want that application because it's going to look at my contact list. Note it's read-only. I'm not quite clear of the reason for this. I'm sure there is a good reason, but it is only read-only. I would have thought it'd be more useful to actually update contacts from third-party applications. There's more chance of me updating contact than reading it, but I'll take a view. Exactly the same for calendar. If my laptop, we'll use Rob's laptop this afternoon. Calendar, exactly the same. Interestingly, it only returns a snapshot. Again, this is through security and isolation. So if you want to refresh the calendars, you'll have to do it periodically. Okay, so let's quickly move on to tooling. So when you install the Mango toolkit, we get some new application types. Oddly enough, one for each of the three agent types, and then we've actually got a 3D graphic application. I was going to do a demo, but I didn't think I had time, so I did some screenshots. I hasten to add, normally all of our presentations go through our UX guys, and you can tell through the quality of cutting of the next few images, they're all done by yours truly, so I do apologize. Starting up a new phone application, quite rightly it says, do you want a 7.0 or 7.1? Basically, a project is either a 7.0 or a 7.1 project. I just realized that I haven't actually tried to convert one from the other. I'll write some notes on that on my blog in the next few days. I'm not expecting any great pain, but with a statement like that, it's going to be great pain. But it's very quick to do. But one of the great features is, do you remember I said earlier that when I was doing accelerometer work before, I actually had to bind a Wiimote, start a local service on my machine, build a stub inside my phone application to then feed everything through so I could do this. The emulator actually comes with a complete accelerometer fake-up. So you basically, if you see that little dot, you hold on to that, and you can spin the phone around, and all the simulation numbers you might not be able to actually see, but these numbers here are exactly the same in the phone. And that was done at some point last night, and I could have done 20 screens, but it works remarkably well. The second one is you actually get GPS emulation as well. Effectively, you get a tile on the side with a complete map. You can put some pinpoints in. You can simulate people moving around. You can simulate people being in a location. You can store data for testing, so you can actually replay very set scenarios. For testing purposes, this rocks. This really is quite phenomenal. As I said, the only one that's missing is it would have been really great for that extra tab that says camera, and that would actually allow us to test probably the remainder of our applications, but not to have. The other thing they've built in is an integrated profiler. Going back to those comments about what do you do about profiling, and, well, you sort of did it the hard way. I'm just going to quickly run through this. If you select Alt F1 to start profiling, it brings you up a little screen like that, and you can actually say how you want it to do all of the profiling on the phone. When it's actually running, by the way, it's just an empty application. It just collects the profiling data, processes the profiling data, and then actually just drops it for you to analyze. What I didn't actually show there is if I'd actually been running some storyboards, actually you'll see extra lines appear underneath for the storyboards and that sort of thing to show how long they've all been running, because quite a lot of people actually have storyboards which actually chew up quite a bit of time. So that's actually quite powerful. other tooling support. If you actually go into properties and then it's a debug, you can actually force it to do tombstoning to make the debugging a bit easier on that. It does say it's got FAS support, but again, I haven't managed to get the FAS working in the emulator, so I'll just have to trust myself that that's there, but I haven't actually tried it. But this is where things actually start to get... I've got an animation. Talking about App Hub. One more. There we go. So the first change in App Hub is you can now actually build beta applications. There's a couple of limitations which I'll go into, but fundamentally, you build an application, you put it into Marketplace as beta, you can then invite up to 100 people with live IDs for them to test. Two important things. It only runs for 90 days. And two, you can't do any updates during the beta period. Very important change. Okay? The second one, which actually I talked about earlier, is the private distribution scheme. So I put an application up. It's not going to be public in Marketplace, but I can then actually distribute it out to my corporate customers or my corporate users. Now, it's currently done through deep links. I suspect very shortly some tooling will appear to manage deep links. I certainly hope so, because that's what some of the corporate customers will want. Quick summary of the difference. There's only one problem which I want to make you aware of. I am actually trying to clarify the point. If you do a private distribution through deep links, there doesn't seem to be anything to stop somebody just sending that deep link to somebody else for them to use. So if this side of the audience worked for me, I put a deep link on our internal solution, you all click on it, the application drops, but one of you decides to go over there, takes the link with them, it does look like the rest of the audience would get that. I'm not saying that you're not lovely people and deserve the application, but you know, for argument's sake, you would want that to actually be restricted. I'm not quite sure if that's true. I'm trying to find that out. I don't have access to the beta app hub to do that testing right now, so this is purely going on Microsoft information right now. But it's just a slight problem. I worry. That's part of my job. It is something I'm actually slightly worried about. But fundamentally, it looks like we've got corporate application distribution pretty much ready to go, which is really good. For those of you, do any of you actually develop games for Phone 7? So it looks like you actually will have to upload a certificate with your application. I'm not entirely clear where you get those certificates from. It's not an area of my speciality, I'm afraid. And if you're interested, I can certainly find out for you. Let me know. If not, don't worry about it. The next major change to... I should take these transitions off. And one more. The App Hub, the big change for me, for those we discussed earlier, I have actually been told that quite a few people here actually have got W8 certificates all been sorted out. We've had a problem. I think actually the W8 tax form being online, you fill it in, submit it, should actually alleviate any problems I've actually seen with Marketplace, and then you can get your report data back from XML, which is very nice. I'm just conscious of time. Distribution is now pretty much worldwide. You're actually in the zones where you can actually submit yourselves, but it's been expanded out pretty much across the world. There's a few areas where it's not, but I think we can live with that. I've got two. Actually, I'm slightly ahead of time. Language support has now changed. For those of you surprised to see Norwegian in there, which is Nokia's home language, was it Swedish? Swedish. To apologise, there you go. But fundamentally, these are Nokia strongholds, and that's the new language support. Who knew? And then two summaries. The tooling's available now with the Go Live license. If you start developing, you can go live on it. I think it's now ready for corporate, so building corporate applications actually works. Mango itself should be available in the fall. That's the autumn to us in real money. I've heard rumours and different people at Microsoft say different things. that the Mango tool for actual phones will be available earlier for users, for developers than users, but then enough other people said that's not the case. So at some point in time, either exactly the same as end users or slightly earlier, you'll actually be able to get the Mango update if you're registered with Marketplace. But let's be fair, the biggest thing that will actually change the landscape of Phone 7 is going to be Nokia. Nokia's adopting it and actually going to be pushing it into all the home markets. Now, Nokia, interestingly, has been actually taking a right panning for doing this, but I think it's an interesting and actually probably a very brave decision. But hopefully for everybody in this audience, it's going to be very, very profitable. I would actually say that it's probably worth joining in the Nokia dev forums, because I think they're going to be running lots of events. Now, I'm not normally sort of somebody who'd go for rumour mills, but it does look like there will be differences in the Nokia phones and APIs and that sort of thing. I don't know what they are. There's been no announcements. There's more Mango stuff to come. And so I'd strongly suggest you actually tie up with the guys who organised this, and actually there will be follow-on events coming up shortly. And I think that's me done. But I'd suggest just continue building as you are now and then continue on. And I'm actually 4 minutes under. Any questions? Time for questions?